This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 132. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can email us on coach@pitchvision.com. And you can call us on 0208 816 7691. My name's David Hinchliffe.
And I'm Mark Garraway.
Coming up on the show, we've got Gary Palmer giving us some more of his strong opinions on batting coaching, and we answer a couple of your cricket questions. But before we do all that, we've got a brand new co-host on the show, so I'd like to welcome Mark Garraway along. Hi, Mark. How's it going?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, David.
So, Mark, there's going to be people who know exactly who you are, and there's going to be other people who are wondering why you've come on to the show and you're tugging at our coattails. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
My background really is I played county cricket for 9-10 years. Never quite reached the dizzy heights that I'd hoped. And then I made a decision very young in my career, really, at the age of 26. I wanted to go into coaching. I'd had some good initial opportunities when I was 25, 26 to coach the Hampshire second team through Hampshire and then Somerset through the academy, the second team, and then the first team. I ended up working with England for 3.5 years, which was a fantastic experience. And then since then, I've been with Cricket Ireland as a director of cricket initially, and then performance director. And I get to this point where I come on board with Pitch Vision.
So things have changed quite a lot since you started coaching, most notably the growth of 2020. I mean, as we talk, we've got the Champions League going on, and it's almost a different game nowadays. How do you feel that your coaching has changed to adapt to modern cricket?
Yeah, I think it has a lot. And in fact, I've literally got off a plane about 3 hours ago from India, where I actually watched some of the Champions League and spent a bit of time around the teams as well. And just looking at it, it's not just the way that the games play, but you look at the physicality of the players nowadays from even 10, 15 years ago when I was playing. It's massive. I had lunch the other day with Shane Watson, and he's just an absolutely colossal bloke. Who's capable of playing some really good technical cricket, and obviously is a huge success within the 2020 game. And it's tactics, it's power, it's thinking about the game on your feet, and obviously doing it under immense pressure. And you know, you look at the IPL and it's packed out. You look at the 2020 games over in the UK and they're packed out, and it's total pressure cricket. Every ball is pressure cricket, and the things, obviously, from being under pressure all the time, things move on very fast. Fielding, for example, you look at the way that people field and the expectation that we have. If somebody dives full length and misses one, that's deemed as bad, whereas 10 years ago, if somebody dived full length and missed one, that would have been deemed as a good effort. And I think the expectation of the cricket watcher, the player, the batter, the bowler, the fielder, the coach has changed significantly as a result of 2020 cricket.
Do you think that has fed down to lower levels of the game, the non-professional levels of the game? Most people listening to this will be playing or coaching at, in a recreational or amateur level. Do you think things have changed at that level as well?
Well, it was interesting. When I finished with England in 2009, I had 6 months where basically I just went around and watched a lot of cricket and met up with a few friends that I hadn't been able to for a few years because I was always on the road with England. And I ended up playing and coaching club cricket down in Somerset at Chard Cricket Club. And I was amazed at how the game had moved on even at club level, and the expectation of people, the field placings was, whereas in years gone by, it was all about the bowlers. Now people were talking about where specifically to get fielders, and you almost had specialist fielding positions in club cricket, which is a very professional thing. And the more exposure that club cricketers get to watch the game at 2020 level, which is the one that's on the telly the most, that's obviously going to have an impact. Some of the shots that people were playing, you were seeing reverse sweeps and switch hits and people, sitting back in their crease and trying to hoy it over the top of mid wicket. Well, those things never used to happen within the club game, and you only have to look at the run rates that people are attaining now in club cricket are far superior to what they were, you know, 10, 15 years ago, where if you batted 50 overs and 200 was a significant score. You know, nowadays you look at leagues and the Premier Leagues and the junior leagues around the countries, and people are getting 250, 260, 280. And you know, that happens week in, week out. So it's definitely had a knock-on effect. And I remember the only cricket that you could have when we were kids was the Test matches. It was the only cricket that was on the television. And now, you know, every day of the week, and you look at, we've got cricket coming in from India this week, you know, these 2 weeks with the Champions Trophy. And I've been amazed. I'm sitting in a hotel at the moment and the game's on the box. So it's very accessible. And obviously that's going to have an effect on club cricket.
Now, of course, England are just about to embark on a one-day series against India in India. It's a difficult challenge for them. Do you fancy their chances?
Hey, I actually do, to be honest. Although I think the selectors in India, having been out there for the last week, have stumbled across a couple of players. You know, out of chaos comes opportunity, and I know that Duncan Fletcher, my ex-boss, will be looking to introduce a number of young players over the course of the next 6 months to see how they fare. And they've got, for example, there's a lad called Aravind, who's a left-arm seamer that's playing in the Champions Trophy at the moment. He's got a great opportunity over these five games in this 1-20-20 to establish himself in the side. He's left-arm, he's got a good pace, good slower ball, and a good Yorker. And I think that that's a different proposition to what England had over here in the last month and a half, where the bowling, seam bowling was very similar throughout. Just that change of angle, I think, is going to test England more than they had over in England. And Gambhir coming back, I think he's a good player and has a very good success rate in 50 over cricket, as he proved in the World Cup final. And you know, towards the end of the series, they're going to have the likes of Sehwag coming back into the team. So also the Indian conditions, you can't take it away. It's a nice time of year for England to go over there and play, because it's not too hot. I remember the first tour that I went on was April in the one days, and that was stifling, and they're not going to have it. It's still hot over there, but it's not stifling at the moment, which will help England out. And I just like the balance of England. I like the way they're playing their cricket. They're very confident, and they fancy their chances, and quite rightly so.
Confidence is a strange thing, isn't it? It's so easy when you're winning games to have it. How do you keep it going over a long period, especially with, you know, somebody, you know, a side like England who barely get a rest? How do you keep confidence going like that?
Well, I mean, you've got two types of confidence, really. You've got a fragile type of confidence that's based purely on results, and then you've got a robust confidence which is based on processes. And those processes are the ones that England have got in place, and they've had in place certainly for the last 2 years under Andy Flower and Andrew Strauss and Alistair Cook now in the one-day setup. You know, they go about their business in a very, very consistent fashion day in and day out, and they believe in their preparation. And when you believe in your preparation, it doesn't matter if you get a duck or you go for 15 in an over, you still then have got your preparation to sit behind you. It's a very Olympic attitude that you talk to them that train for swimming events or athletic events. You know, they go into their training, they say that their confidence comes from their training, and that's exactly what England have done. And all they do is go out under the pitch and show off what they've done in training. And that's where robust confidence is, and there's no doubt about it that this England side at the moment has got robust confidence. And you can imagine them going into the series, losing the first game, but still coming out of winning the series, whereas that hasn't always been the case with England sides years gone by.
Well, Mark, you're going to be coming on the show regularly, and we haven't forgotten about Berners. He's still knocking around, although he wasn't available this week. So we thought it would be a good chance to have a proper chat with you and introduce you to all the listeners to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. So welcome on board. And we're going to have an interview or the start of an interview with Gary Palmer now. And once we've had a listen to that, we'll go on and we'll answer a couple of readers' questions. It's been a little while since we last spoke, but I'm joined today again by Gary Palmer, who is a coach at CCM Academy, his coaching academy, and he's also the batting coach, the online batting coach for Pitch Vision Academy. Welcome back to the show, Gary.
Nice to be back, Dave.
So today we're going to talk a little bit about the way that we see people getting coached these days, because with the advent of 2020, the coaching seems to be moving towards getting players scoring in unusual areas and playing all kinds of crazy shots in the nets, which of course the kids love to do because you know, there's nothing they like more than attempting a switch hit, so and failing spectacularly usually. So I've seen that happen quite a lot recently. So what are your views on the way that kids are getting coached these days?
I see a lot of coaches out there teaching the shots that you've just mentioned, and you know, while everyone says the game's going forward and with the emergence of 2020 cricket, you need to have, you know, have all these shots up your sleeve. I just think in the process of building a player's technique up and experience up, the most important thing, and it always will be the most important thing, is actually hammering home the basics and getting them as near as damn it as perfect in practice. And I think sometimes kids are taught to learn these fancy shots before they've actually nailed the basics. Now, if you can do the basics really well, then that gives you a really good foundation to improvise from, to hit over the top, to manoeuvre yourself in the crease, to hit boundaries and take risks. But and if it comes to a point of match when you have to survive for a little while, then you've still got your good basics to fall back on. But unfortunately, with coaching all the fancy shots, what that can do is make a young player's basic technique deteriorate, and it can also lure them into playing high-risk, silly shots when they probably don't need to do that. I mean, if you're in a game of cricket and you need to hit boundaries and you find that clearing your leg and smacking it straight back over the bowler's head for six or four keeps working, well, just keep doing that. You don't need to bring in these other shots. So sometimes I think both players and coaches get carried away that it's a must that you have to do these things, when I think they're very high risk and very dangerous shots for young players to be attempting. And it takes the emphasis away from them working hard on a daily basis at enhancing their basic technique to get it as near as damn it perfect. When you've done that, then maybe you might want to take the risk and do one of those shots. But you must get those basics in order first. There's no point having a scrappy off drive or straight drive. It's not quite right. And then suddenly, next time you go to practice, all you're practicing is loads of reverse sweeps, because there's no consistency there in your basic technique. And all that's going to happen is you're going to go into a match and you're probably going to fail more times than you're going to succeed. So, you know, the good bread and butter shots, whacking the ball down the ground, sort of in the V, that they are just as powerful and as useful for 2020 cricket as all the other shots that have more time doing those first. And you might find you don't need those other shots. I think some kids play it just to show people, look, I can do this shot, where I'd rather see a bloke go out there and get me 50, 60 or 100, rather than come in and told me he's played three Dilshans and a switch hit, but he's got out for 10. Not really interested. Want the big scores. Want the match-winning innings. And, you know, people say, oh, well, we do it to move a fielder. Well, I've seen it where there's a fielder there anyway, and the kids, and for that matter, first-class players, they'll still play the shot because it's an in shot, it's a trendy shot, it's the thing to be doing. But is it the best thing to do? That would be my question. So, very dangerous ground to go on if every time you go into a session on how to play spin, all you do is reverse sweep, switch it, paddle it, and all that sort of stuff. When I go out to bat and there's men around the bat, I need to know how to defend the ball against the ball turning in and away. Therefore, I need to know what side of the ball to put my foot. I need to know how to milk the bowling. You know, a nice calculated straight drive, off drive, or on drive with the spin. And I need to hit it over the top. You know, I think we need to spend more time bulking up and working on those things first. And maybe if you do that really, really well, if you decide you want to have a go at those other shots, that's fine. But when coaches are teaching it to kids and pushing it as hard as they do, young lads are forced to play it in the middle when maybe they wouldn't have done it, and they'll get out doing it. That's my view on it.
Is there ever a place for those shots being coached, or is it so important to work on the basics that you would leave it for, you know, the most advanced only, and you would never coach any of those unorthodox shots?
I think that's a very valid point, what you've just said there, and I think you're bang on. You know, if a player's a county cricketer and he's in the side year in, year out, and he's successful and he decides he wants to try and play those shots, you know, that's up to him. If he wants to take on board that type of game plan, he'll go away and practice a shot. And if it works for that person, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But, you know, a player's game plan is his own personal individuality. As far as building his technique goes, we all need to play in the V, front and back foot, like robots. And there's only one way of hitting a good straight drive, on drive and off drive, as far as technique goes. We can call it biomechanics if you want. One way of doing it, and that's it, the best way, the most efficient way. But when we go into game plans, you know, if a player decides that's they're confident enough to have a go at playing that and it works for them and they keep doing it, fine. But I think that's their decision. As a coach, you could throw the idea of sweeps and reverse sweeps at them. If you could try this, if you want to do it, that's your call. But I don't know. I personally don't want to be a man who's coaching a young lad or a county player who's – I don't want to give them the tools that could make them fail. And for me, those shots are those tools. That's up to them if they want to take the risk in doing that. But I wouldn't want to push that too hard.
Time now for the questions section on the show, and as you know, if you're a regular listener, the best question of the week is selected by, well, normally by Berners, but we'll do it from Mark this week, and they win a prize, which is a coaching course, an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com, and there's plenty of batting, bowling, fielding, fitness, and pretty much every other course you can possibly imagine available there for the best question. So I've got the questions this week, and the first one is from Suhail, and he's got a couple of questions. So it's quite a general one to start, and we've answered this question many times on the show before, but it'd be interesting to get your point of view on it, Mark. I know you're not a specialist bowling coach, but it'd be interesting to get your point of view on it generally. He's asking what he needs to do to generate some gas when it comes to his bowling. So I suppose really the question is, for you, is it all about pace? And if it is all about pace, is it something that you can teach to somebody?
Well, I think it's not all about pace. Pace is an optimal thing, but yeah, it isn't all about pace, because there's lots of good bowlers down the years in modern day cricket who have been very successful not bowling at 95 mile an hour, and you can name hundreds of them that have done it at test level, at first class level. So whilst pace is preferable, you know, as long as it's controlled, it's good. But otherwise, it's all about mastering what you've got at your disposal, really. So I'm not a massive fan of just saying that pace is the be-all and end-all of everything, because it's not. Going back to the original question, which is how do you get more pace? Well, it's difficult to really assess that without watching somebody bowl and being able to put some slow motion camera on and all of the other bits of analysis that we have available to us through systems like Pitch Vision and many others as well. But the physicality element of fast bowling can never be underestimated, and I was lucky enough to grow up around the likes of Malcolm Marshall at Hampshire, physical specimen. You know, he was an athlete, really, as well as being a fast bowler. And then when I went to Somerset and coached Andy Caddick, you know, he was a great physical specimen. He looks after every part of his bowling specific body, you know, from his toenails all the way through to, you know, to his quads and his core and all of that. So unless you're in a good physical nick, you're not going to be bowling at express paces. You look at the conditioning of the top guys. You look at Brett Lee, for example, fantastic conditioning, and that helps him to reach those speeds that he does, even you know, as he ages. So The England side physically now are in great shape, and as a result, their bowlers are more consistent, can maintain their paces for longer, which means that they're more penetrative. And so I'd say if you're going to do one thing to make yourself quicker, then the first thing you do is get yourself into a good conditioning program.
Yeah, I can only echo that. And I think one mistake that people make when they decide to start training is, you know, they go to the gym and they get given a program by the instructor that isn't necessarily the type of thing that would help them best. Because I think what you're saying about some of those great bowlers is, although they were all extremely physically fit, it was also about how they moved and how well coordinated they were. And, you know, how, you know, when you talk about it in bowling terms, you talk about rhythm. But really, that's just all your body parts coordinating together to generate the maximum amount of speed and accuracy at the same time. And that not only comes from technical coaching, but it also comes from being aware of your ability to move. And that isn't always, you know, going to there. Of course, there's a place for going to the gym and doing your strength training. But it isn't always about that. It's also about how well you can teach yourself to move and jump and land and adjust and be balanced and have every part of your body in the right place at exactly the right moment so you can get that snap through your action. And so for me, when you say, you know, fitness or strength and condition, that's almost not quite the right description for it. It also needs to be about how well you can move.
Yeah, definitely. And it's that functional training, isn't it? You watch the real top end strength and conditioning coaches now, and it's all about movement patterns and long lunges and core and basically everything geared up into that bowling action. And just to pick up on one of those points that you made there, balance is absolutely crucial, because with balance you can transfer momentum, and that's exactly what you're doing within a bowling action. You're transferring momentum from your feet upwards into the ball to get it to go down the other end at an optimal pace and an optimal direction. And if you're unbalanced and if your body's going in two or three different directions, obviously you're going to be taking pace out of that cricket ball.
Yeah, it looks quite easy, the bowling action, but and it is quite easy to get the ball down the other end, but to do it in an extremely coordinated way is why the guys at the top of the game are at the top of the game, I think.
No, I agree.
The second part of his question, which I think happens to a lot of people, certainly at the lower levels of the game, is there's kind of they kind of get a technical ADD. The way he puts it is, I don't know if this is a common problem, but I tend to try and bat and bowl differently and change my technique every time I see someone new. If I see how Brett Lee bowls, I'll try and bowl like him. And then if I see Dale Steyn bowling, I'll try and bowl like him. Have you ever... working at a higher level, I suppose you see that less than the, you know, the teenager who's just going to the nets on his own and wants to mess around in the nets and imitate all the bowlers. But what advice would you give to someone with that kind of that technical attention deficit disorder?
Yeah, I mean it's an interesting question, that, because as a young silly age, at the age of 9 to 13, before I started to play cricket, I felt that was what I was doing. You know, I'd see whoever was bowling best on the television, I was trying to mimic, and there's some real merit in that. But ultimately, I did see some video footage of me bowling, and it looked exactly the same as my normal bowling action. So it might feel it might feel like you're doing Malcolm Marshall's or Curtly Ambrose's or whatever the case may be. But more often than not, because your action is quite ingrained, particularly by the time you get to 16, 17, you're looking at very, very fine differences. And saying that, I think there's some real merit in watching some of the top performers and seeing how they go about it. And then trying to bring something that might work for your particular bowling action in. The danger is that you look at somebody who's got a completely different bowling action to yourself, and then you just start to try and bring that in. It's all about trying to work out what's most complementary with you. And if you like the way that Brett Lee braces his front leg and it works with your bowling action, then have a go at it, see what the effects are. And, you know, and if it doesn't work particularly well, then it's something that you can put away. If it works fantastically well, then so be it. But if you actually video things, you will see that there isn't a massive amount of change, because the bowling action, particularly when you get to a certain age, is fairly ingrained. And certainly when I was growing up, as much as I thought I was bowling like Imran Khan, I was still bowling like Mark Garraway, unfortunately.
Yeah, and it comes back to balance again, doesn't it? And to a certain extent, how well you line everything up as well. It's as long as those things are coming through the action, then it doesn't matter if you experiment with something and it doesn't quite work out. But yeah. I think the important thing, as you say, is to, you know, look at yourself on video and see what you are actually doing, because
that's going
to reveal a lot more, isn't it?
And it's that building of awareness, isn't it? Because, you know, we can be, if we don't see video, if we don't get feedback from others that know about the game, then we can go along blindly sometimes. And the more awareness that we have of what we're doing, means that we're more informed about what needs to change, what needs to stay, what are the strengths that we've got. And the most aware cricketers generally are the best cricketers. You look through the world's top 10 batters and bowlers on the Reliance rankings, and there's not too many in there that aren't 100% aware of where their game is and what their strengths and weaknesses and opportunities to develop are.
So I think what we're saying is, don't be afraid to experiment, but don't make experimentation the only thing.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Okay, the next question is from Shahzeb, and he played for National Bank of Pakistan under 15. So well done. Well done to Shahzeb. His problem at the moment is that it's nothing technical. He feels like he's out of form, and he doesn't know what to do to get back into form. So what advice would you give him, Mark?
Well, if you talk to somebody like a Justin Langer, he talks about your recipe, and at some point in his life, he'd have been in form. And it's about remembering and maybe recording when you're going through good patches what you do and what your behaviours are. And if you can get yourself back into those behaviours, you're likely to create some good mental imagery, some good feelings in your body, in your kinesthetics, that get you somewhere back to that form. And everybody's got different ways. There's no set way of doing it. But one of the strongest ways is to make notes when you do well. I think a lot of the time we're too flippant almost when we do well, and we tend to over-review when we do badly and under-review when we do well. And everybody has had a good set of innings. Everybody has had a good purple patch. And if you can remember what those things are and what those behaviours were, even if it's how many balls you hit before the game or how ready you are when you go into bat, or, you know, how much time you give yourself in between each ball, whatever your recipe is, if you repeat that recipe over and over again, that successful recipe, then it only stands you in good stead to repeat consistent good performance. And certainly, I mean, there's one of Justin Langer's early books, which talks about his early days within Test cricket, is a really good insight into that whole recipe approach. And I know that he's not the only person that's done that. But there's been some other things. You know, I've heard people that have worked with Graham Gooch down the years who have said, you know, when you're out of form, practice less, and when you're in form, practice more. You know, which is probably the opposite of what most people do, to be honest. But it was something that stood him in good stead when he played, and I know that a number of others have benefited from that advice when they've been going through bad patches, where they, in fact, they haven't tried to overanalyze it too much, and they've sort of stayed away from the nets a little bit more, stayed away from practice a little bit more, and then it all comes good, and then you practice hard to maintain it. And it's the same in all sport. I mean, sport's about momentum, whether it's individual batting, whether it's about, you know, teams winning games on the trot. And when you've got momentum, you do whatever you can to keep hold of it as best as possible. You know, when you're scoring hundreds, you want to continue to score hundreds. And then similarly, when you go out of form, you've got to try and get back on the horse as quickly as possible and get back to those good habits, those good recipes that are going to give you the best chance of success. So, I mean, for anybody out there, if you want to read a book, then have a look at the early Justin Langer books, because they're a fantastic read. And I think that his struggles through early days of Test cricket are very, very consistent with some struggles that people have at under 15 level for their clubs.
One thing that I've learned about form is that a lot of people think that it's something that is outside of them. It's something which is a force, an external force, which sometimes they are bestowed with it from, you know, from on high, and sometimes they're not. And I think if you can get your head around the mindset that it's something that you have got control over, rather than something that is is a mystical force that comes and goes as it pleases, then that, I think that's the first step on it. on the path to you know, getting back into form if you're out of form. And the other thing is, when it comes to form, I think there's probably two types of people. There's people who, when they're in form, are wondering when it's going to end. And there's people who, when they're out of form, are expecting it to come back any moment. And it's just, again, about just a slightly different frame of the same situation. You know, if you're in form, you're expecting to be in form rather than wondering when it's going to end. And if you're out of form, you're expecting it to yourself to get back into form quickly rather than just waiting for that slump to continue. So I think purely from a point of view of how you frame form as well, it is a really important way to get yourself back into it as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I mean, you can't control everything in a game of cricket. You know, you can't control somebody playing the innings of their life. You can't control somebody bowling you an absolute jaffa or an umpire getting it wrong. Those are things you shouldn't worry yourself with, because, you know, they're not within your control, or largely they're not within your control. But you can control your mindset, which is what you just talked about there, and the way that you view things, and you can control your preparation. And I know it sounds boring, but I hark back to preparation. And if you get your preparation right, you give yourself the best chance of being successful, the best chance of minimising those periods where you're not in good form, and the best chance of maximising those periods where you're playing at the top of your game.
Yeah, sometimes the simplest advice is the best advice, isn't it? Sometimes it's no more complicated than keep working hard at your game. And if you're not working hard at your game, then you haven't got anyone else to blame, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you can work hard and smart, which is why I encourage any player, when they're doing well, to really review on why they're doing well. It's so easy to do a review when you've lost a game or where you haven't got any runs. But when you do well, it's massively important to have a look back and see where it was. And Clive Woodward made that a really big part of his coaching philosophy with England, is that let's really review when we do very, very well. And as a result, we learn that our behaviours are controllable and we can take that into the next game or the next series.
That is your lot for this week, but just before we go, remember, we do give away a prize every week, an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And in the absence of Berners this week, it's going to be Gareth who's giving us giving away the prize, the winner's prize. So who do you feel is the best question this week, Mark?
Oh, I like the question about form, because I think it's something that affects everybody, whether you're a batter, bowler, fielder, or a team, or a captain. So that one, I think, provokes the most thought and the most conversation, because it's something that affects us all.
Well, congratulations, Joseph. You have your chance to get an online coaching course. If you head over to pitchvision.com, you can have a look at some of the options there, and you can let us know which one you want, and we'll give you instant access to that. If you want to contact the show and get your question read out and have a chance of winning a prize, you can do so by contacting us in one of the myriad of ways that we have of getting in touch. You can phone us on 0208 816 7691, and we have international numbers if you're not in the UK, and they're available on the website. You can email us and coach at pitchvision.com if you have a long question. If you've got a short question, you can send it over to us on Twitter. We're at PV Cricket Coach. And if you're on Facebook, and everybody is these days, aren't they, then you can do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and you can find us on Facebook and leave a question on our wall, or contact us through the Facebook system. You can also subscribe to the show if you want to get advice every week. Then you can go into iTunes. You can do a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and you could subscribe to the show in there. And if you want to leave a review for the show as well, feel free. 5 stars if you like us. If you don't like us, why are you even listening in the first place? If you don't use iTunes, then you can subscribe to the show by going to pitchvision.com, and we've got the feed details in there. So until next week, when hopefully we'll be able to track Berners down, and me and Mark and Berners will be able to have a good old chinwag for another half an hour or so. We'll see you next time. Thanks very much, Mark.
Thank you, David.